Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Today's guests are actually guests, not guest. I've got two young ladies with me today. They are Kate Offord and Mel Hayes. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, we're excited to talk to you, Simon.
me to talk to you too as well, because we've got an unusual subject today. But before we go on to that, I'd like to introduce the two ladies that are my guests. Firstly, Kate Offord. So I knew Kate when she was a candidate on the Level 3 course, British Triathlon course, that I was teaching 2 or 3 years ago. So obviously, she is now a qualified Level 3 coach. She's also the head coach at Manchester Triathlon Club. She is a tutor for British Triathlon Federation. And she's also the founder of the Smiling Triathlon Coach business. And I will give you the details of where you can reach Kate a bit later on. Now, Kate's business partner, so co-owner of the Smiling Triathlon Coach, is Mel Hayes. Mel's also a personal trainer. She's a childminder. And as an athlete, she's world long-distance duathlon champion in the 50 to 54 age group. I did ask her, and she said she wouldn't mind me disclosing that. She also finished third in her age group at Ironman UK last year. And what's more relevant to this subject is that Kate has two children, an 8-year-old boy and a 7-year-old girl. And Mel has a 16-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy. And they've both got partners that are also involved in endurance sports. So they are very busy mums. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you might have heard the podcast that I did with Graham Brookhouse, and we were answering a question about how does a busy mum fit in a triathlon training. And then on the back of that, Kate sent me an email. So, Kate, just tell me about why you sent me that email, having listened to that podcast.
Well, the reason I sent the email is I was out for a run, and I always like to listen to your podcast when I'm running. So, about 30 minutes. That's what I was aiming for this particular run. And I was really interested in the interview with Graham. And I thought, you know, he's made some good points. And then there was a question, you know, basically saying, I'm a busy mum. How can I fit my training around my busy lifestyle and my children and my job? And with no disrespect to you or Graham, you both answered the question. And I thought, you know what? Neither of them are a busy mum. And I thought there's probably a lot of mileage in terms of actually there's so much that we can say about busy mums and the pressures that are on them and just the differences sometimes that there are between the pressures on working women and the pressures on working men. So I dropped you an email and said that Mel and I would be interested in talking about that a bit more, because obviously Mel's a performance athlete with a job or a couple of jobs and two children, and I'm more of a recreational athlete, but my training is important to me and I'm also balancing the same things, and we thought we could give you a good perspective on the sort of tricks and things that we do to fit our training in.
Absolutely. And so for those of you who are not female who are listening to this, please don't switch off. Don't switch off and exclude this podcast, because there may be something useful for you here, particularly if you have a partner who is training. These may be some of the issues that she faces. You may have female friends who are training for triathlon. If you're a coach, I'm pretty certain you will have either female athletes in your club or female athletes that you will coach now or will coach at some time in the future. But also, I think that the time management issues that we're going to discuss here will probably be useful for both men and women when training. So this will be a good podcast for everybody, not just for females who are listening. So you were good enough as well, Kate, to send me a nice little schedule of items that we should discuss. So I think the first one you sent is always a good place to start, is how much training do I really need to do? And how do I fit it all in? That's a question that I know men and women face when they're deciding how they're going to prepare for their triathlon. So what sort of questions do you ask of your athletes, and what sort of issues do you face when you're deciding on those two things?
Okay, well, with our athletes, we'll talk to them about, you know, what jobs do they do, you know, what family commitments do they have, and take a note of all of those and find out what support they have, which I think is really important. And then we put together a training plan. And I, you know, for me personally, I have to write each week in my diary what spaces I've got to be able to do my training and how am I going to fit that in around my very busy schedule. And I think it's really important to have a plan, so that you know what you're doing each week. But then it's about finding support mechanisms. So that might be things like, you know, can I do a bit of childcare swapping with someone to so that I can go out and do my run? Kate and I talked about sort of ways that we used to sort of plan our own schedules, especially when we had much younger children. I mean, my partner and I, we used to play what I called exercise tick. So I'd go out the door in the morning because I'm a morning person, and do my exercise, and then I'd come back and I'd look after the kids, and then he'd go out and do his exercise, and then we'd have some family time together. So I think one of the things we talked about, Kate and I talked about, was understanding when you exercise best as well. So are you a morning person or are you an evening person? So, you know, don't put something in your training plan in the evening if you really are not an evening person, because I'm not an evening person. I like to do all my training first thing in the morning. But you have to be realistic about what you can actually achieve as well.
I mean, a lot of people, I think, are a bit overambitious in terms of, you know, what they think they can fit in. And I think, like, social media and the internet are really good at kind of making people feel like everyone else around them is doing loads and loads of training. And I think one of the things that we tend to try and do is get people to rationalize, like, what is their actual goal anyway? And actually, in some respects, it's like, what is the minimum amount of training that you're going to be able to do that's going to make you get that goal? And then you have to be quite clever about how you position the actual sessions within that. So one of the things that I've tripped up on, I know, is I was trying to sort of cut hours out of my sleep in order to, yeah. So I was working later. So I was, because my job is quite odd in the sense that I used to coach sort of every evening till about 10. And then I'd work all day on my own businesses. And then, so my training time was getting earlier and earlier in the morning. And then I was even getting to the point where I was getting up early and doing some work and then going training and then taking the kids to school. And actually that's where you say to someone, that's not a realistic way of training. And that's not, you're not going to be able to sustain that. So the amount of training that you can do is really about stepping back from your goal and going, right, I'm doing a sprint triathlon. Realistically, I can fit in 4 sessions a week.
It's about training smart.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know,
do you think that triathletes in general tend to pick a goal first and then work out how they're going to train for it? Whereas based on what you're saying there, they might be better off saying, right, well, I've actually only got 4 hours a week I can train, so I could do a sprint or a super sprint. I could probably get through an Olympic distance, but it's going to be beyond me to adequately prepare and feel mentally prepared for a long distance race there.
Hit the nail on the head there, Simon, because I think you're quite right. I think people choose the goal. So they say, right, I'm going to do an Ironman. And then actually, when they look at how much time they've realistically got to do it, they can't really fit it in.
Yeah, and then that becomes an issue because then they become anxious and then you're guilty because you're spending more time away from your what you've already said are priorities. So looking after your children or looking after your family or doing your job properly, and you've actually overcommitted. And that's where you get people then sort of, in inverted commas, like failing at their goals because they've set their goals way ahead of what their life is going to allow them to do. And I think it's you, Simon, always talked about the stress cup. And basically you've just got a cup and you've got to put, you know, you've got to put yourself into it, you've got to put your family, you've got to put your job, you've got to put everything into that stress cup. And then you put your training in. And quite often that's when it overflows, and you know, you can only fit so much stress or stimulus into your life. So I think starting with a realistic goal that you can do well and you can achieve, you know, beyond your expectations is probably the best way to start, rather than starting with the goal.
But one of the things I think I'd like to raise, though, is I think women do suffer from this guilt of training, you know, when they've got for family, and especially a young family, when it's difficult to get out and they think, oh, I shouldn't be training because I should be with my children.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that men don't suffer from that, but I think
certainly anecdotally from the sort of, you know, we've got 500 members at Mantri, I would say women experience more guilt than a lot of men do.
But you know, so for women, I think they've got to accept that, you know, training is good for them, and you know, not feel so guilty about doing it, and actually it gives them the headspace to
be a better mum.
You know, and it's, you know, okay, you might have to fit that training in early in the morning, but don't feel guilty about doing it.
Yeah, and actually as a role model for your kids as well, it's important that they see you being active and doing something for yourself.
When you two had children who were younger, did you ever take them out on training with you? So did either of you take the push chair and push that along while you were going for a run? Or have you, once your children were able to, were old enough to ride bikes, did you run while they could, you know, go around the park or along a trail, for instance, while they would ride their little bikes alongside you, and so you could chat with them and bond with them and get your training in and have a little bit of exciting family time for the kids?
There's loads of stuff you can do, and actually we were laughing about this earlier. You know, even when if you've got a baby, we were talking about one of our friends who had a really young baby, and whenever the baby was asleep, she used to get on the turbo trainer and do like a full turbo session. And then because she couldn't get out for a brick run, she used to run up and down the stairs. But, you know, that's a really good training session. And then the baby would wake up, she'd be happy because she'd got her training done, and they'd get on with the day. So even from when they're little, you can do stuff that kind of incorporates the children.
So when they're having their swimming lessons, that's a great opportunity for you to have a swim. I mean, I was definitely one of those mums who was running with the buggy when mine were little. I mean, I wasn't doing triathlon when mine were very little. I only really got into it in the last sort of 7 years. So mine were a bit older then, but I came into triathlon as a runner. And I'd definitely run with the buggy.
Yeah, run with the buggy and getting them out on their bikes while you're running, that's a great one. And especially, you know, for a lot of mums that are getting their fitness back, I would say your child's bike speed when they're sort of 5, 6, 7 is probably a reasonable running speed. You know, it's quite a nice conversational pace type run. So I found certainly with my kids that's been really, really good for me. We've also used like parties. So if we know that kids are going to a party, me and my friend used to like drop the kids off, get them settled in, and then either one of us would stay at the party and the other one would go and run, or when they got a little bit older, we'd both go and run while they're at the party, come back after an hour and a half, a little bit sweaty. But actually what we ended up with is about 6 mums coming with us, because they're like, actually, that's a really, really good idea. So it becomes like a bit of a social.
It's being creative with your time, really, thinking what windows of opportunity have I got and how can I fit that in? And I don't always have to be with my children all the time. You know, if being able to go out and do a run makes me a much happier mum, then go and do it and don't feel guilty about it.
Because a lot of mums, and we coach a lot of ladies that have either got teenagers or younger children, and the one common theme that seems to run through them is a lot of women lose a lot of confidence after having children. Now, there is that sort of coming into triathlon, you need to kickstart that confidence that actually it's okay to go out and train 6 hours a week or 10 hours a week. But it's almost like sometimes some women need permission. Like we say, like, it's okay to do that, and this is a good thing that you're doing. And then it's almost like they get that permission and they get their confidence back. And I think it sounds, if you've not experienced that, it sounds a bit weird, but there's so many women, I think, that have experienced that themselves, and suddenly finding themselves again and just running and being free, or swimming in a lake, it's like, oh my god, I feel like me again. But almost you need someone to say, you need to go away and be you.
Yeah. you know, with a lot of female athletes, we hear about headspace, and that they need the headspace, and that's why they enjoy the training so much, because it's all about them and no one else.
You're not just somebody's partner or somebody's mum.
Okay, right. So I would think that the once you've worked out exactly how much time you have that you could devote to swimming, biking and running, and you've come up with some creative ideas, I think we're on a roll there. We're getting some stuff in. we're taking the kids out in the buggy. We're getting them to ride their little bikes alongside while we go for a run. And let's face it, that's got to be more beneficial for them health-wise than sitting at home playing on their iPads while you go out for a run. I know one lady who used to have her little boy ride alongside her. They would go along the towpath by the canal, and he would carry a bag with an energy bar in it and some water and a gel. And then she would say to him, right, okay, so imagine I'm coming up to an aid station out of race. So you cycle up there and get the stuff ready for me. So he'd race off up the canal and he'd just far enough so he could get ready, but close enough so his mum could see him. And then he'd put his bike down and he'd get his bag out and he'd get the water. And then as his mum ran past, she'd say, I'd like water, please, and a gel. And he'd hand them up to her and she'd stop there and jog on the spot and drink her water and eat a gel. And then she'd toddle off and he'd put the stuff back in the bag. And then he'd get back on his bike and he'd catch his mum up. And so he was really proud of how he was helping his mum. She was really proud of him helping her, and so they had a fun time out, and it didn't seem like training to him, and he wasn't complaining that he never saw his mum.
No, it's great. I mean, we coach a lot of dads that use that sort of method as well. Like, I've got a guy that I coach in New Zealand, and his son does nearly all his training with him, and he's training for an Ironman. So I don't make his son do 3-hour runs or 2-hour runs, but you know, like, you can do really fun stuff like you just described, and the kids love it.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, because my dad was into triathlon, and my brother used to go out and train with him as well, and that's when he got into triathlon as well. He doesn't do it anymore, but you can involve your children,
inspire them
at the same time.
Okay, right. So now you mentioned the sort of fact that females tend to feel guilty more than men. I know from some of the ladies that I've coached that they're always thinking about other jobs that have to be done in the house. That's part of being a housekeeper, keeping the house tidy, doing the washing. You know, they've got to maybe ferry the kids to and from their own activities. And even if this isn't getting in the way of your training, it's not actually what I'd call recovery. And so one of the big problems with doing the training is how do you actually find the time to recover when you also have those other activities that are competing for your time?
Yeah, I'd just like to make one point. Actually, I found when I was training for my first Ironman, the fact that I never sat down, but very rarely, actually helped me with my Ironman, because, you know, I was used to being on
good
my
endurance,
feet. So it was good endurance, but I'm not saying that is the best way, but it's certainly, because as a mum, I never seemed to ever sit down. When it actually came to the event, it was like, okay, well, this might
just
be a
normal day.
This might be a 12-hour race for me, but you know, actually, that's just a normal day in my life.
Well, and there is one other thing to add to that, is that if you sit down too much, I've noticed this myself as I've ended up writing more programs and doing less direct coaching, is that your hips get tighter, your back gets tighter.
Oh, yeah.
And actually,
I listened to about that, about recovery, and actually we should be walking around rather than sitting down.
Yes, exactly. However, that doesn't detract from the fact that there's lots of things competing for your time as well as recovery. So how do you make sure you get enough recovery?
Well, we said already, like, not sacrificing sleep, so not kind of trying to train at the end of your day or the beginning of your day and losing that sleep time. And obviously, like, a lot of people with young children will be having disturbed night sleeps, because either children wake up at 4 a.m. and think that that's the time to party, or they wake up at 12, 2, 3, 5. So that in itself, that sleep deprivation can be a real issue. And I think this is where you have to sort of use your support network and be realistic. Like, I actually,
one of the things that made me laugh the other day, I was coaching, and I coach at 6 a.m. on a Saturday till 9, and one of the mums is a GP, and she said to me, Kate, you look really tired today. And, you know, firstly, I said, thank you very much. That's made me feel much better. But she said to me, you need to have a nap this afternoon. And I laughed. I just laughed and walked off. But actually, she's absolutely right, because I'd had a broken night's sleep. I'd worked for 3 hours from 6 a.m. I was going to go for a run. And actually, the obvious way to recover from that sort of a day is to have a nap. And we all go, oh, no, oh, well, I can't have a nap. But you can. And it's about like having those conversations, saying, you know, to the person you live with, can you just take the kids for an hour to the park, or I just need some time for me, and have a bath or have a sleep or do something where you're not like present. Because as soon as, certainly with my kids, if they see me, they think it's like an indication that I'm going to either make them food, or I'm going to give them a drink, or I'm going to do something miraculous for them. But actually, if you say to your partner, like, I've done a really long bike today, I just need an hour or an hour and a half to just recover. You've got to start communicating, or get your kids to go on a play date and just use that time to actually relax.
Yeah, and that's the same for men as well. Yeah. They need time to recover as well. So it's having that communication with your partner and finding time when you can have your own space as well.
And I mean, social media, again, is a bit of a, you know, it portrays all these women as Wonder Women who don't, you know, they don't need to sleep, they don't need to rest, they just run, swim, bike, you know, they make cakes. Actually, Mel does do all these things, but I don't. And like real people, like you can't sustain that. And it's not weak to say I'm tired. It's actually being realistic and say I'm actually tired today. I need to tone it down, or I need to take a break.
Yeah. And I think something that Kate and I discussed earlier was that sometimes that's why you have to have a plan. And sometimes that's why it's important to take on a coach, because they will write you a plan.
And they will tell you when you need to recover.
Because otherwise you can just keep on training and never have any recovery in that. But I think it's one of the most difficult things to get right, to recover, especially if you're a busy mum, you're trying to train. As you said, Simon, you know, doing the housework, you've got to do the shopping, you've got to get the kids from school, we've got to do their homework with them. It is really, really difficult to fit all these things in. And sometimes you just have to take a step back and say, is this all realistic?
Is it still realistic? Is my goal still realistic? Is the amount of time that I'm dedicating to it still realistic? Is my head space still where I need it to be? And are my family still happy? Are we all happy? Because, you know, you hear a lot of stories about people falling out with their families because somebody's training too hard and, you know, not feeling very well with it. So it is about taking a step back every 6 weeks and just saying, is this still where I need it to be?
It seems you mentioned this word several times in that last little bit. It's about communication. I sometimes think that triathletes of both sexes tend to be focused on this goal and assume that because of that, everybody knows what they want to achieve. But none of us exist in a singular relationship, do we? We all have people around us, even if you're not married. You maybe have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You have parents, you have brothers and sisters, and you have friends, and you have work colleagues. And including those people in your journey right from the very beginning creates a much more harmonious environment. Yeah. And I think we all would agree that you prosper in a harmonious environment and you struggle in a frictional environment.
Yeah, and I mean, you see it in like elite athletes, you know, certain elite athletes that are racing well, you find that they're actually in a really happy place in their relationship. And it's only the same with kind of us mere mortals. If you're unhappy in your personal life, your training is likely to be affected. And if it's your training that's making your personal life problematic, then something's got to give.
And I think my husband and I learned that very early on as well, because he does Ironman distance events. And there was definitely a point in our sort of relationship where we were both training for an Ironman. We weren't really communicating with each other. We had much younger children we got now, and now we've just learned that every day we have to speak to each other about, so what are your plans for today? What training do you want to fit in? How are we going to organise that? And that's just made everything so much better, rather than thinking, I've got to do this, and then finding that we're just clashing.
Sometimes there's an equality issue. So in terms of like my husband, he's a much more talented athlete than I am. So there was always a part of me that was like, oh, his training should take precedence over mine because he does better than I do. Whereas actually that's not really the way to think about it. Like, you know, everybody deserves to have their training time, whether you're, you know, doing 5-minute miles or 12-minute miles. So it's about sort of, you know, having a bit of self-belief in pushing your own training needs forwards in that communication.
You mentioned something else before we started recording the podcast about physical versus emotional strain. So I guess that we talked about physical stress and some of the through the training, which is the obvious one, but and we're sort of getting into emotional strain in what we're talking about now, in coping with other things that are going on, coping with relationships, coping with your children's lives as well, and what's happening in their lives, because they're developing, they're going to school, they've got exams, they've got their own growing issues, if you like. And I guess that in that thing that you mentioned before about guilt, the female member of the partnership often feels like she has to be responsible for all that stuff as well. So how do you balance out physical versus emotional strain? How do you identify the difference, and how do you cope with them both if they hit you at the same time?
Well, I think me and Mel are kind of at slightly different ends of the spectrum in terms of, so at the moment, my children are still quite little, that I have the more sort of physical strain with them because I can't, unfortunately, leave them on their own. And I have to take them everywhere that I go, more or less. Whereas Mel's children, they're at a very different stage of life, and it is a much more emotional strain.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter's due to take her GCSEs this year. And I made a conscious decision that I wouldn't do an Ironman this year because I probably would do Ironman UK, which comes in July. Her exams are in June. And I just felt that I need to be there to support her emotionally because she suffers from anxiety. And I know how much that affects me physically as well, not just her, because I kind of live her anxiety with her. And that really does affect my training. So, again, it's about being realistic about what you can achieve that year if you know your children are going through something quite difficult in their lives. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when they're little, it's much more about physical strain, you know, especially when they're little babies and you're having to carry them around all the time. But yeah, I think people underestimate the emotional strain and how that can affect your training. I mean, I'm training an athlete at the moment who has a child with emotional difficulties. That puts a massive strain on her. And she likes to go out and train, just because we talked about headspace earlier, and she said that gives me the headspace to be able to cope with him. But yes, I think it's a really important thing to understand in different stages of your life.
It's not just age group athletes or mothers or fathers that need that headspace. You know, I've heard Alistair Brownlee talking about the fact that he doesn't meditate, but he often finds that if he goes out and runs on his own for an hour, that helps to clear his head if he's got lots on, you know. And just because he's an elite athlete and he's only focusing on triathlon doesn't mean he hasn't got stuff going on in his life. He'll be having issues about which races to choose, overcoming injuries, you know, sponsorship requirements, media requirements and everything else. So they have lots of stuff going on from a different direction.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do use training as a sort of a release, if you like, a bit of headspace. So it's interesting to hear you talk about that. You've mentioned it on several occasions now.
It also helps you be creative. So if you're trying to balance a busy job and you've got a busy home life, you know, when you're at work, you're sat really focusing on your job and everything's kind of emails are popping in, everything. When you're at home, everything's, you know, going crazy. Actually going out for your run or your bike or your swim, like quite often you find that's when you're creative and that's when you do have your good ideas, and that actually impacts positively on maybe your work life or a part of your family life. So, you know, do you need to fit it in for different sort of emotional aspects, whether that is stress, creativity?
Just like you coming up with the idea for this podcast, Kate.
Well, you see, if I'd not been running, there's no way that I would have thought of it, but my head was clear of all the other stuff I was getting on.
Okay, so as we know, the best laid plans for every triathlete can get disrupted by life. As a mother looking after children, one of the most frequent disruptions, I guess, is when something happens to your kids. Either they need something or something happens at school, or they're not feeling very well and you have to take care of them. So when that happens, what tips have you, or what tricks have you used to continue your training around ill children, or what mental tricks have you used to cope with the fact that you actually can't do any training?
I think some of that, again, goes back to communication. So, you know, if you've got children and you're in a relationship with someone, then it's about, you know, you may have to take time off to look after them while they're ill, but then, you know, talking to your partner about, you know, once they get home, can you go out and do some training? But also just sometimes accepting that sometimes you just can't, and that actually,
and that's okay,
and that's all right. And, you know, what is more important, you know, is it your training or is it looking after your sick child? And one would hope that people would put their sick child first.
Yeah.
You know, it's and just not beating yourself up about it.
I think that's the thing, like mums tend to be really, really good at beating themselves up about everything. And this is one thing that you can't control. And actually, you know, on that week, your child pulled rank. But, you know, I remember my kids both got chicken pox like back to back, and we missed our holiday, and it was just hideous. But, you know, like, I just had to know that I was basically stuck at home with the kids for 3 weeks. But then, you know, my husband was good at saying, like, okay, you've had them all day, I know you're going crazy, now go running, here are your trainers, like, off you go, and that's fine. But, you know, just don't beat yourself up about it, get your kids better, and then focus on your training again.
But then, you know, doing things like getting the turbo trainer. I mean,
turbo trainer. You know, you've got a brand of trainer that you like, Simon. But, you know, getting on a static bike, you know.
If you're off and the kids at home sick, then there's still nothing to stop you getting on your turbo trainer. You know, you can get on and off if you need to give them a bit of attention.
Or, you know, doing some sort of, you know, strength and conditioning, sort of body weight stuff.
Hit training.
We've been talking with our athletes a lot about skipping recently. Now, you don't have to go anywhere when you're skipping. You can skip on the spot. It's not too good if you're indoors, but you can just be outside, and you're within earshot if anybody needs you. You could easily do a combination of a strength workout and an aerobic workout with a little bit of creativity. Yeah. I think that's also at the heart of this, isn't it? It's about being creative. And obviously, Mel, you're a very good endurance athlete. You'll have a good history of endurance if you came from running as well. So you don't have to be topping that endurance up every single day. Sometimes it's good to have a rest. Physically, I think we all know that rest is good for us. It's the mental acceptance of that, isn't it? Particularly when you have a particularly hard turbo session that's one of your breakthrough sessions, and then, you know, something upsets your schedule and you have to change course.
And actually, we haven't really touched on eating properly, but, you know, in terms of your recovery, if you're not fueling yourself sort of appropriately pre and post training, then that's more of an issue. So you tend to find that, you know, you might rush in and then somebody else needs their tea made for them. So you forget that you also need to eat because you've just done a 90-minute run or, you know, a hard turbo. So it's also about you remembering your needs physically, not just sort of coming in and cooking for everyone else.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's really important to mention here, though, Simon, as well, is that, you know, if you do miss a training session because, I don't know, your child's off sick or whatever, that is not to try and make up that session, because that's a mistake so many people make, is that they I didn't fit that in, so I'm going to have to do my long run and my long bike on the same day.
Yeah, and then you end up getting ill and injured yourself.
I guess you could identify key sessions that you should do within a week. And if you can't do the key session today, then you move that one forward and you dispense with one of the less key sessions.
Drop something else.
But as you say, you know, if you end up having to shuffle those sessions backwards so that they would all fall on a Sunday, then it's deciding which one's the main priority rather than trying to do all seven of them on the same day.
Yeah, but I mean, we laugh, but triathletes are so focused and driven that, you know, you do hear of people kind of getting quite obsessed about not missing a session, and that does happen, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. Okay, so one last thing then. You mentioned that pressures, I think we've touched on this already, actually, because of the disparity in ages between your children, Kate, and yours, Mel. But as the children get older and they grow up, what sort of negative things does that have on your training? But also, what positive things can it have if you're smart?
Well, I think the negative things are, you know, teenagers, they tend to come with a lot of emotional angst, I think, and the things that they, you know, GCSEs are really tough nowadays, so there's that stress. Also, as an older athlete, there are things that I'm going through the menopause at the moment. So that is really tough. So I've got teenagers, plus I'm going through the menopause. I mean, we could do a whole podcast just on that, to be honest, Simon, about, you know, the issues of training and being menopausal.
And trying to get on the podium at IMU. Yeah.
So, you know, the stresses are different depending on what age your children are. I think we've touched on that already. I find although having teenagers means I don't have to be around, which is great. So that is definitely a positive. So I can now get out on my bike for 6 hours without worrying too much about them because they've got a phone and they can phone me. Yeah, I think it's there's much more emotional stress with teenagers than you get with little ones because, you know, you can generally give them a hug and a kiss and they're fine.
Yeah, tell them not to worry and they leave you. Yeah.
So it's just different challenges, isn't it? The challenges don't end when they get into the teens. They just change. And you have to be mindful of that and just be prepared, I guess. I suppose that for me as a coach, dealing with this is to say to athletes, look, what are your priorities in life? I would guess that most people who have a family would put the family as their number one priority. And therefore, if something comes along that affects the family, then other things have to be pushed to one side, and that would include training. And
but rationally, that's what people think. So if you sit down and you have a conversation, then rationally that will be people's sort of response. But actually, when people get into the throes of training and that kind of endorphin sets off, and that sometimes it's hard to see the wood for the trees and realize that they're maybe not putting their priorities quite in the right order, and sometimes that's quite hard for women because they're literally trying to be Wonder Woman and do everything for everyone and train and do all this stuff, and sometimes that's why I've said you need to check in quite regularly, because you can have those initial conversations where everybody's like, yeah, these are my priorities and this is how much I'm going to do, but in reality it's really easy to let that sort of spiral out of control.
Okay, good point. Put me back in my place there.
Sorry, Simon.
No. You're absolutely right, and it's interesting to get this perspective. So, as we round up, then, if you were going to give some top training tips for busy mums, what would we leave them with? The top four or five things that they can take away from this conversation we've had today.
So, have a plan. You need a plan. You need to be realistic about what you can actually achieve with what's going on in the rest of your life. I think finding out what your support is and communicating with the people around you. What else do you think, Kate?
Well, I think it's basically like keeping your goal focused. So keeping that goal in your mind and having a goal. And making sure that, you know, you are doing all the things that you need to, and remembering why you set that goal in the first place. So, you know, you talk to people about having a mantra when an endurance event gets hard. Well, have a mantra when your training program gets tough. So, you know, so I would say, yeah, like Mel, plan really well every week, be realistic, look at your support networks, communicate, and like have your reason why. Have your goal and why that's important.
and be creative. I think we've talked about that, you know, how can I fit my training in? Can that be when my child is swimming or when they're at a party? Or can I do some when they're asleep, or when I do a child swap with someone else who I also know is training. I used to child swap when I was running with another lady who was training as for a marathon. She'd have my kids for a couple of hours and then I'd have hers. So it's just being creative about how you can get your training in.
Okay. Wow. We've got six there then.
Sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. That's 5 + 1 bonus. I always like to give people a bonus. You did say when we spoke initially that you might have been able to put this down on a download for people to get from you. Have you done that?
We will have it. So what we were thinking is if we've got a Facebook page which is just called Smiling Tri Coach. So if people give us a like and drop us a message, we'll send them the top tips download and some background on how we fit in training and family stuff.
Right. So Smiling Tri Coach is the Facebook page.
Yeah, and the website is www.smilingtricoach.co.uk.
Okay, well, we'll put that in the show notes. But for listeners, if you want to get that download of how to, the top tips that the girls have come up with there, and probably a little bit more detail on those, you'll need to go to the Facebook page, which is Smiling Tri Coach, like the page, and maybe put a comment there telling everybody how you were telling them how much you like the podcast, and you'll get that download sent to you. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
Perfect. Right, so I hope you enjoyed that, listeners. I have. It's certainly opened my eyes to a few issues that I might want to consider myself as a coach when I have female athletes. And that's what it's all about, adding value to what you do as triathletes or coaches. If you can close off listening to today's podcast saying that you've learned something, then I feel that my job's done, and hopefully the girls feel like their job's done. So I'd like to say goodbye to Kate and Mel. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us once again. Next week, we'll be back with another great guest. But for now, enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for listening. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today. And I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com, and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.